Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel filling in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. And let's get right to it. We'll start off the show today with this contribution from Jim Stevenson, whose The Game Room podcast is available each week on voanews.com. Take it away, Jim.
Just had the best week of our lives.
After 2 years of all the build-up, the anticipation, the predictions, the Ryder Cup was a blowout for the third straight time, with Europe defeating the United States 17.5 points to 10.5 points at Le Golf National near Paris. Europe captain Thomas Bjorn was pleased with his team.
This turned out pretty exciting, because the way the 12 of them have just joined up together as a team, and the way they looked after each other and been there for each other throughout the whole week, made captaincy pretty easy.
The final day began with many doubts. Which team would win, as the singles matches were initially close?
Today's performance, there was a little moment there in the middle of it all where I was getting a little bit worried, but then everybody stood up and did their bit, and I can't describe how I feel about these 12. They've been amazing from day one, and I'm just so proud of him.
In the end, U.S. captain Jim Furyk could only praise Europe.
Thomas did a great job as captain. The players on their team, class acts, and I mean, gritty. When we put some heat on them this morning, they responded this afternoon, or early this afternoon, they responded. And they played some great golf this week. I'll take my cap off. There's nothing else more you can say. They deserve to win. They played well.
Tiger Woods, who went 0-4, thought there was a good chance to win.
We talked over last night, and we had an opportunity to do something special today. Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
And Phil Mickelson, who may have played in his final Ryder Cup, felt the strategy of the player matchups was as good as it could have been.
You know, some of you might question some of the decisions, but everything was done with reason, input, thought through, and then it's up to us to execute. And we just didn't quite, we didn't execute. And let's be honest, the European side played some exquisite golf. I mean, it was some phenomenal golf, and they flat out beat us.
For Thomas Bjorn and Team Europe, every player finished contributing at least 1 point.
That doesn't happen very often. It's very easy to sum it up. You know, some play five matches and some play two matches, but they all contribute. And when you sit in this situation at the end of it, this is the best team room I've ever been in.
French member Francesco Molinari had his best Ryder Cup showing.
I honestly don't feel any difference bringing 5 points or 1 point or half a point like I did in Wales or in Medina. I said it yesterday when they were asking me and Tommy about winning 4 out of 4. It doesn't mean anything if you don't win the cup.
Tiger Woods was also not so concerned with individual results.
This is not an incredible feeling right now because we lost. We come here as a team. We win and lose as a team. So the individual accolades don't mean a lot.
And as a team, Captain Jim Furyk would have no hesitation to go back with all 12 players.
I realize as a leader of this team and as a captain, the brunt of it's going to be on my plate, and I accepted that when I took this role. We came over here and played our practice rounds and prepped for this golf course, and I'm going to say it over and over and over again. I have every confidence in these 12 players. I think we have a great team. I would take them right back into another Ryder Cup and play it all over again if I could.
Furyk will continue to help the U.S. team improve with the goal of winning the cup back.
I tried to take that ball and keep it rolling, and we didn't have the success we wanted, but I felt like we made some strides in areas this year, and I'll help our captain in 2020, and I'll help him get better as well.
For now, it's all celebration for Team Europe, evident in the latter stages of their meeting with the media.
You know, this golf course has 18 holes.
Really? I think I played them on Tuesday. You know?
Thank God we played 18 that day.
Sorry, what was the question?
For Captain Thomas Bjorn, the win now leads to another prize, a Ryder Cup tattoo.
The worst decision I made all week.
No, it was the best.
It was clearly the best.
LeBron James has begun the next part of his storied National Basketball Association career as a Los Angeles Laker.
It's like the first day of school, you know, for me. You know what to expect, but you are, at the same time, you don't know what to expect, you know, me being my first time here.
King James comes to the Lakers well aware of the great players who have preceded him.
This franchise has been a historical franchise in this league for years. Don't even have to talk about the years they won championships, talk about the players that came through this franchise that wore in this uniform. So that's an excitement in his own right. And then it's just always humbling for me anytime I get an opportunity to be a part of something special.
James thinks he will fit in well.
You know, I believe my game can fit with anybody. I'm a team-first guy. I love passing the ball. I love sharing the ball. You know, and then watching these guys from the outside looking in, the level of pace that they play with, I'm excited about. I love getting up and down and running and things of that nature.
And he likes the group around him.
That's definitely exciting, for sure. You know, when you see how many multiple ball handles, how many guys that can do multiple things, you know, pass, shoot, rebound, put the ball on the court, you know, get out and run. So, you know, it's going to be fun to see how I can implement myself into that, and we can all implement each other and get the best out of each other.
LeBron James has appeared in the last 8 NBA championship series, but a 9th is not necessarily his benchmark for success.
I don't believe the only thing of success you mark in the season is winning a championship. There's only one champion. But that doesn't mean you're not, you know, not successful. I think, you know, it's going to be good times, it's going to be bad times, you know, and that's what happens with a team that's new.
The Golden State Warriors have been James' nemesis for the past few seasons, but he says it will take a while for the Lakers to reach Golden State's level.
We can't worry about what Golden State is doing. Golden State is Golden State, and they're the champions, and they've been together for a few years now. So, you know, we put that to the side. We can only focus on what we can do to get better every day as a Lakers franchise, and, you know, and hopefully someday we can put ourselves in a position where we can compete for a championship.
With Hollywood projects and other outside interests, LeBron James says it's the chance to play with the Lakers that brought him to Los Angeles.
My decision was based solely on my family and the Lakers. Listen, I'm a basketball player. I play ball. That's what I do. That's what I live by. And when I do it at the level I do it at, everything else take care of itself.
The Milwaukee Brewers and Los Angeles Dodgers won their respective division tiebreak games to help set the Major League Baseball playoffs as the Colorado Rockies and Chicago Cubs battle for the National League wild card to face Milwaukee. The Atlanta Braves face the Dodgers. The Cleveland Indians play the defending World Series champion Houston Astros in the American League, while the Boston Red Sox await the wild card winner, either the Oakland A's or New York Yankees. The division series are best of 5, while the league championships and the World Series are best of 7 games. Game 1 of the World Series is October 23rd. In California, the mild weather is ideal for soccer. The U.S. Women's National Soccer Team has already won 3 Women's World Cup titles, helping the popularity of women's soccer in the United States grow as the sport attracts new fans and more parents encourage their daughters to play. The Professional National Women's Soccer League has 9 teams in 9 states, and even though as many as 250,000 players are registered in various soccer clubs throughout California, professional women's soccer has yet to arrive there. But there are semi-professional women's teams, like the L.A. Galaxy Orange County. Scott Juniper is the head coach.
There's very few things that our women can't do. Their range of passing might be slightly less in terms of the distance of the passing that you'll see. But the individual ability, the shape of the game, the quality of the game, the tactics required are very, very similar. They're equally as competitive. They're equally driven. And, you know, I think the United States has done a really fantastic job of providing an environment for women and girls to really thrive in this sport.
Despite its simplicity, soccer is not an inexpensive sport. On average, parents will pay as much as $3,000 per year to register their daughters in a soccer club. That does not include the cost of traveling across the country to compete. Some soccer moms, like Lana Alarcon, hope their girls play well enough to obtain a college scholarship.
The thinking is, from the club perspective, is that you're paying it forward. So what you're paying in clubs
fees is going to help your child get a scholarship in college.
Few will ever reach that level. But for those who do, scholarships can pay for a child's education and everything else that comes with being a soccer player. It can also be a stepping stone to a professional career. Five young women from LA Galaxy's Orange County team have already signed professional soccer contracts, including Jordan Murata.
I think the main reason is that competition for women. The competitiveness that we have inside of us that we don't get to do when we're sitting at a piano or playing, you know, something that's individual. I think with this, you get to work with the team. You get that team spirit and that sportsmanship that you can use. And these are we're all sisters. We're all, you know, friends.
Jordan dreams of making her way into the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team to represent her country at an international level, an achievement that would no doubt inspire other young girls to follow their own dreams. The Game Room opens with new stories each week, or play anytime on voanews.com.
That's Jim Stevenson, who produces the Game Room podcast each week on voanews.com. As Jim mentioned, the Major League Baseball playoffs start for real today, with the best of five division series playoffs in the American and National Leagues. The famed New York Yankees find themselves playing their historic rivals, the Boston Red Sox, after winning a playoff game on Wednesday night against the Oakland Athletics. The towering outfielder Aaron Judge put the Yankees on the scoreboard early with a long home run in his team's 7-2 win.
The most important thing was, you know, getting out of the top of the first. You know, Severino did that for us, you know, so I was just feeding off, you know, what he did for us in the top of the first and, you know, trying to put a good swing after Cutch had a great at-bat.
Here are the baseball pairings we've been waiting for. The Colorado Rockies take on the Milwaukee Brewers. The Atlanta Braves face the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Cleveland Indians play the Houston Astros, and the Yankees and the Red Sox will play off. Here's more on the baseball season that just ended and the postseason to come. I'm joined now on the sunny side of sports by Gabe Lax, the baseball writer for USA Today. Welcome to the show, Gabe.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
It's good to have you here. Here we are finally on the first day of the real part of the playoffs in Major League Baseball. It was an exciting season in many ways with, as I mentioned earlier this week on the show, game 163 having to be played by four different teams in the National League to figure out which team was going to be the division winner and which team was going to go into the wild card game that just ended. Gabe, why don't you tell us a little bit about how the National League wrapped up and why we wound up getting to game 163 this week for a couple teams?
Yeah, well, this was a first in baseball history. Never before had two divisions ended in a tie after 162 games. Typically, a season that long sorts everything out. But after all of those games, the Los Angeles Dodgers and Colorado Rockies were tied atop the National League West, and the Milwaukee Brewers and Chicago Cubs were tied in the NL Central. So we have had division and wild card tiebreaker games before, but never two in the same year. And if you think about the odds of two teams in each division landing on the same record after all that time, it's pretty astronomical. So yeah, they each played an extra game, a one game tiebreaker, and those were won by the Dodgers and the Brewers. One team, the Dodgers, winning at home, and then the Brewers going into Wrigley Field to defeat the Cubs. So they were able to avoid playing in the wild card game, and now they're well rested and ready to go in the first round of the playoffs.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We're joined right now to talk about Major League Baseball, whose regular season just wrapped up, actually on Monday, one extra day, and now we're moving into the postseason with the ultimate World Series coming up sometime later this month between the winner of the National League and the winner of the American League. But we have a couple of weeks to go before we get to that point. Gabe was just talking about this unique scenario that started the week with four teams having to play an extra game in the season to decide which team finished in first place in one division and which team would go into the wild card game. Gabe, a lot of people have talked in recent years about 162 games in Major League Baseball being too long. So what does this scenario do to that argument?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's I think there's some validity to the 162 games being too long. I think if you were to shorten the season, it would certainly reduce the inventory, which wouldn't be a bad thing because baseball actually saw a 4% attendance drop this year, which was largely attributed to some really terrible weather in the Northeast and Midwest way back in April. But at the same time, there's so much what you might call meaningless baseball in September with teams that are well out of contention. So it's I think it would be tough to go away from the tradition of 162 games. People are so used to that. So that's kind of an eternal debate, and it would be curious to see if it does ever get some traction. But it's certainly when you have to play an extra game in the manner that those four teams did, it can extend you a little bit, especially the losers, because they had to go on and play the wild card game, and that was interesting because the Rockies managed to bounce back and reverse their fortunes and beat the Cubs in the wild card game. One of them was going to lose, and it seemed like the Rockies were a little more up for bouncing back. And so now I think the effect that you have is that Colorado will continue on into the playoffs, into the division series, with really a pretty good feeling of momentum, you might say, of having survived losing a key winner-take-all game and then winning one. So now they'll, I think, go on and face a Brewers team feeling like they don't have too much to lose. So I think that particular series will be a lot of fun just because they're two teams with not a very rich winning tradition. Milwaukee has only won two division titles since 1982. The Rockies have only made the playoffs as a wild card, and neither team has won the World Series. So it should be a very spirited series between those two teams.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We're talking about Major League Baseball with Gabe Lax from USA Today. The season just wrapped up earlier this week. Gabe, we're talking about the length of the season. Many of our listeners may know that we started talking about baseball at the very end of March, and here we are in the middle, well, the first part of October, and we'll probably be talking about it in early November or late October at this point. It's a long season. One of the questions that baseball has been trying to figure out is how to make the games themselves a little bit shorter. Especially in the playoffs, we see games stretch into the four-hour range. But during the regular season, some of the games can get to 4 hours themselves. What has baseball done this year, and what might you see baseball doing in the future to possibly reduce the length of the games? Right now, I think the games are a little bit over 3 hours on average.
Yeah, it's back in February, decided to limit the number of times you can visit the mound during a game. And that doesn't just include the manager or the pitching coach coming out to talk to the pitcher. It also includes infielders or catchers coming out to chat. And that really, you know, it's tough to totally see how much that helped. But the average major league time of a major league game went down from 3 hours and 5 minutes to an even 3 hours this year, which is interesting. You're never quite sure what's you know, the cause or correlation and things like that, but it seemed like it worked, and it did feel a little faster. I mean, it's kind of nice when the shortstop can't go over and just chat for the heck of it with the pitcher. That can certainly turn off viewers. I think viewers are a little more willing to sit through playoff games because they do matter so much more, and if you're watching and an engaged fan of the team's playing, you might be a little more willing to put up with that. Of course, the casual fan who has to be at work, get up at 7 in the morning the next day, might not be so willing to sit through a four-hour game that begins at 8 a.m. But I think Commissioner Rob Manfred achieved his objective of shortening the game. He had threatened to unilaterally implement a pitch clock, which, of course, baseball has never had, famously, a game without a clock. The union resisted that, and they hammered out this agreement on limiting the number of mound visits. Now it'll be interesting in this offseason if the commissioner feels he needs to take further action and jam the pitch clock through. But I don't think he'll do that necessarily, just because I think they want to maintain a good working relationship with the union. And I think the objective of trimming a few minutes off of the game worked. TV windows tend to be round numbers, and so the average time of a nine-inning game actually fits snugly right into a three-hour window. So I think if there's a way for him to continue to encourage them to play faster without any drastic measures, you know, that might be what we see this coming winter.
That's Gabe Lax, the baseball writer for USA Today. We'll have more tomorrow with Gabe and a review of Thursday's playoff games. Let's move on now to this news on African football. Earlier this week, CAF President Ahmad Ahmad said the continent will support the re-election bid of current FIFA President Gianni Infantino. The election will be held next June in Paris. Mike Mbonye caught up with Richard Obieno, a former vice chairman of the Nigerian Football Association, to talk about CAF's decision.
My reaction is that it's a good development and it's a normal practice in football administration, because you end up going to where your interests are. There must have been something they have extracted from the FIFA president. Give me your support and I'll do this for you. And he will agree with me that he has really done well for Africa. And for them to have a collective decision, I believe individually they carry out that decision, because that is the usual practice. I think that decision was taken for the best interest of African football. For example, African football needs some injection of funds. African football needs some exposure of more teams in the World Cup. African football needs some technical assistance from FIFA. I'm sure they have gotten an agreement, gentleman's agreement, based on these factors that I've listed. So it's a good development.
In previous FIFA elections, after taking this kind of decision by the continent's ruling body, some individual African countries went the other way, voted individually against the collective interests of CAF. Do you think such a thing will happen next year?
You cannot rule out anything from human behavior. I don't believe you have such practice, because people who are in the game now are more committed. If you notice, let me tell you, in the last 5 years, there has been a tremendous development in African football. You see African teams holding their own against the best teams in the world. Yes, you cannot rule out that fact, but a resolution is a resolution, and the FIFA president will appreciate it for what it is. No resolution is ever 100%, because that's what it is. You're free to do what you want to do. But at least a large majority of associations in Africa will vote for the FIFA president.
What's your take on the personality of Gianni Infantino, the incumbent president of FIFA? How do you see him? What's your assessment of him in the past 3.5 years?
Well, I must confess, after taking over from, I think it was Blatter.
Yes.
He has played at FIFA. It's a good positive sign for him and quality for him. And if you check at the last World Cup, I think it was properly organized and they made more money. And there has not been any financial controversies or negative reports. So on the general, I think he has done well and deserves a second term.
What more can the continent gain from FIFA under the leadership of Gianni Infantino?
Autonomy. If you see the way they handled the interference of government in the Nigerian Football Federation, you could see that they are going strong on autonomy. And if the African associations are free from government interference, I think African football will grow to a level you will not believe. It will grow to be an industry that will provide funds, employment, and inflow of capital into the African football, which is what we need now. And if they can handle the way they are handling the various interference from government, African football will stabilize and move forward. So the major thing I believe they can do for us is to stand their grounds and be firm when there's an interference. I think the Nigerian case was the third issue, and they handled it successfully. No politics, no sentiments. These are what the rules are. It's either you're with us or you're not with us. And if you're against us, you leave. Because any associations, the country signed resolution that there must not be any government interference in the election and the running of football. That's a major mark I wanted to achieve.
That's Iron Mike Mbonye, who talked with Richard Obieno about the decision of the African continent to support FIFA President Gianni Infantino next June. And that wraps up the October 4th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger and VOA engineer Cornelius Tenner. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. Democrats are energized to vote in the upcoming midterm elections, hoping to defeat or diminish the Republican congressional majority. We talk with Democratic strategist Will Marshall, president of the Progressive Policy Institute, about the obstacles and incentives for Democrats in November. That's Press Conference USA, Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. First Lady Melania Trump goes to Africa. J. Peter Pham, director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council, and Jennifer Cook, director of the Institute for African Studies at the George Washington University, talk about the First Lady's trip to Ghana, Malawi, Kenya, and Egypt, as well as the latest on U.S.-Sudanese relations. That's Encounter, Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa News. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.